To call a man transparent is to attack his soul, his very being. It can be received as the ultimate insult. Unless, that is, the man in question is actually, literally see-through. Ladies and gentlemen, Tom Shanklin and his olive-skinned friend Dave.
Good luck, everyone.
A bit more.
Good luck, Tom. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode. We never know what number it is. This episode of
19, I think, mate.
Our weekly podcast. I'm David Flatman.
I'm Tom Shanklin.
And we've got a special guest this week, haven't we, Tom?
We do.
We've got with us ex-England captain, ex-Leicester Tigers and Bath legend, British and Irish Lion, World Cup winner. Should have Googled you, really. How many caps did you get?
71.
He also scored two tries versus Wales Colts in 1997.
I thought you were just going to cut it there at two tries. He also scored two tries at the end.
Yeah. No, you turn your phone off, Moodoff. It's Lewis Moody, by the way, and his phone's going off.
Is that right? Two tries versus Wales Colts in 1997?
It was, mate, actually, yeah.
And he later called up to the Tour of Hell in 1988.
Well. That was a good start.
1998.
Right, is your phone on quiet now, Moodoff? It's Lewis Moody, everyone. Were there anyone here, you get a round of applause.
But it was Danny Hipkiss. You don't get a call from Danny Hipkiss every day, do you?
Well, I do actually, because
Jamie Roberts' twin.
Yeah, mini twin. He fit in Jamie's Lego pocket, though. Lego Ed Hipkiss. He was like the...
Isn't he doing your...
He's done a load of jobs here for us and does... Yeah, and...
What, cleaning?
Yeah, yeah. He just walks the dogs and one of their anal glands needed, so he does that. He's great with that sort of stuff.
It's like Entourage here, isn't it? Got all your mates, do
but
stuff
Danny
for
did
you.
Load of, Danny did a load of work here. With his builder mate, and he's going to do a load more. We're getting him in to do some stuff. He's good. He's unbelievably organised and efficient, aggressively efficient.
Duncan Bell cooks
naked
for him.
Or
he does. He will do sometimes. Topless. He won't do naked when I'm here.
What other ex-boys do you employ? Who does your garden?
I don't employ.
Who does your garden?
Shut
just
up.
keeps him in a job, doesn't he?
It's
he's
his
a
business.
Man of the people. Man of the people.
I support his business, and he's.
Tiggins does a garden.
And he's expensive, by the way, but he's worth every penny. Not the most expensive quote, but he wasn't far off, but he was worth every penny.
Very disciplined.
Very, very good. Very disciplined human being. Right. Anyway, how you doing, Moodoss?
Mate, I'm lovely.
You all right?
I'm lovely. That's a weird thing to say.
No, you are lovely.
Yeah.
You are.
Well, it's lovely to be here, actually, in your new abode, which is quite remarkable, I have to admit.
Yeah,
we're in
the west wing of the house.
Shut up. We're not. The house is a... dump at the moment, but one day it'll be a nice house. But I just need to have been a footballer, basically. That's what I need to have been to actually get
this
done.
Is not far off. I'm very impressed.
No, I'm very stylish. I'm a stylish guy,
but it is genuinely nice to catch up with you boys.
Yeah, because we
I
don't
say that with some sincerity.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because we've moved. I've obviously, as you know, you're sitting in my living room. We moved back into town a couple of months ago, but we lived about 5 minutes from you, and
We caught up all the time, didn't we?
Yeah, hardly.
I mean, just pop around for walks
ever.
And stuff.
But we just basically didn't see each other because you're all over the place all the time. And I'd drive past your house all the time and your car was never outside it, you know, because you're always off somewhere. And
Mrs. nicked it most
of the time. Mrs. nicked it. And you just didn't see each other. So, it's funny how you do that, isn't it?
That's like, mate, that is life, though, isn't it? You think all the boys we used to play with and the number of them... Well, maybe it's just me, actually. Maybe it's just me that doesn't see anyone in your boy. You're like, oh, we had a great catch up the other week. Oh, awesome, bye. But life moves on, doesn't
it? You get new mates, don't you? You get like, dads from school you go to the gym with and stuff, don't you?
oh mate.
Moodoss. Where were you?
Yeah, yeah. He's a very strong human being, the lad I went to the gym
school
with.
School friends.
Time. Yeah, you've got to make some, haven't you?
You do, you
can't just sit at home with a dog all day.
It's MORs, like mates outside rugby.
Yeah.
So you went to the gym last night with the dads from school?
I did, yeah. Just racked up the bench. Yeah, 50 kilos. It's going
The Julie Dench, we call it.
The Judy Dench, mate. It was brutal. It's embarrassing these days, isn't it? Like, you used to be able to, well, when I say used to be able to smash the bench, that was never strictly true.
Yeah,
65. But we did a strip set on 50 kgs. So we essentially had a 5 and a 10 kg on each side and then stripped it down to the bar. And I was doing like 7 reps on the bar at the end, which, and you got a gym full of beautiful physiques across the board. And there's some skinny ex-rugby international trying to
play for England, mate. That's
mate,
you should be better than that.
I'm all about
World
running.
Cup winner.
All about running.
You like
days,
the running,
mate.
Don't you?
I think it was running. Tom Biggs that said, shit goes on in life, but 100k bench is still 100k bench.
It's funny because we did all these different physiques and stuff, and you guys were obviously, just better specimens than I was, hence more caps and whatever and all that. But you've got Moodoss, I remember doing like the bike ride with you, and we both turned up having done almost no bike riding, John O'Groats to Land's End. And you obviously found it difficult, but you basically pissed it. But I found it so difficult that I thought I was going to die on an hourly basis. I thought this might actually be where I perish.
Mate, watching you was motivation in itself. Seeing your ass swallow that seat up was just... I mean, it literally looked like you were sat on the stump of the of the bike seat. But mate, in all fairness, like seeing you and Gruy do that, I mean, I was probably 15 and a half stone at the time. You boys were probably 20 odd stone. I mean, that's ridiculous. Like, Gruy snapped his chassis, the wheels, pretty much everything.
Else. Literally snapped his bike.
Yeah.
He built as he went.
There's a sport you're not built for. Cycling. I mean, you should do swimming, mate, because, you know, you're weightless in the water then, aren't you?
Yes, you didn't have any issues, though, did you? I had a flipping infected cyst.
Where?
On the bottom of my... old boy, just in between the balls and
from the saddle sore?
Yeah, just sitting like grinding. Yeah, it's like grinding.
I'll tell you what, I had no. I mean,
you have to get your phone out to take a picture to actually see it.
The worst bit, we had to. So it must have been. I don't know what. How long did it take us? 9 days. Like day seven, I was like, "Oh, this is brutally uncomfortable." Especially if you try and get in those clips in the morning. You know, you get into the cleats. And you slip and you miss it and you just grind your nutsack right into the saddle. And it was absolute agony. Yeah. It was so painful.
Like, 13 hours to go.
It literally got to the point where I couldn't sit on the saddle and had to go see the nurse at one of the pull-ins. And literally they had like a white van, which was was her like physio area.
Yeah,
and I had to just pull the kegs down
and get
the old twig and berries out.
Yeah, put your legs over your head.
Your legs, my ears are cold.
It was freezing as well.
In your most vulnerable position.
But I remember the night we finished. I mean, it's a whole other conversation. We've probably had it on the pod before, but I was just completely broken at the end. Got to Land's End, and you lot were already in the pub at Land because having a pint, because I was obviously a few minutes behind you. And Alex was like, "Do you want to go for a pint?" I was like, "Absolutely not. Get me out of here now. I don't want to see anyone. I'm dead." Went back to the hotel and sat on my bed, took all my kit off, sat on the bed. I literally walked into the hotel still wearing my special shoes, like cycling shoes. I couldn't even change my shoes. Got undressed. Alex put the shower, ran a bath or whatever. And I was just sitting on the bed, just sitting like slumped. And she's like, "I help you up." And she helped me up and started screaming. And underneath where I was sitting was just all the white sheets were just red with blood. Like, everything was just like shredded.
Yes. I thought like you passed out or something.
That would be better. Everything was shredded. Yeah. And, like, I was doing, you know, little boy wee wees and like missing blood, and it's like not good at all.
Tells you about the numbness that happens either.
Weeks afterwards and completely numb. Yeah. I mean, quite good fun actually. You know, like, feels like someone else is doing it. It feels like someone else is.
Yeah, no, they don't told me that beforehand. Also, just a note: never stick Compeed in those areas either. The nurse stuck a Compeed on my,
did she?
On the undercarriage. Oh mate, getting that off was.
Oh no!
It was like 5 hours in the bath, and there was still no give to it.
Sudocrem, like, it's like Sudocrem's your best friend, isn't it?
Yeah, but there's nothing that solves it. Honestly. But you do quite a lot of challenge. We'll talk about what you're up to these days in a minute. But you do challenges, don't you? You do crazy stuff. So what have you done since you stopped playing, these polar adventures?
What have we done? I've done quite a few now. So we started probably with that bike ride that I did with you and Gruy. So it was Land's End to John O'Groats. Did an ultramarathon. Well, attempted an ultramarathon actually, it probably would have been a couple of months after that.
Yeah. When you say attempt, you didn't. You Josh Lucy'd it, did you?
I fully joshed it. Did you get
frostbite or something?
Yeah, frostbite in my finger. I had no concept of like frostbite or whatever. I just thought, how difficult can it be? It's going to be cold. I'll get on with it. And 3 days in, so we were doing 300 miles. You had like 12 days to complete. You have to reach certain checkpoints.
It
was brutal. You take your own gear, you know, totally self-sufficient. I absolutely loved it, you know, testing yourself, being out of your comfort zone, just like being back playing. And I did it with a 50-year-old, you know, businessman and a mate of mine who's a polar explorer, which was quite handy. Essentially just woke up one morning about 3 a.m. because you have to get up early to make sure you get the mileage in. And I was helping one of the other guys with his kit and took my gloves off. And when I was a kid, I sort of cut through the nerve in one of my fingers. And two minutes of having my hands out in the cold, and that was it.
Three hours
into it, I was like, "Fingers a bit weird." And I took my glove off, and it had gone like white, solid white. And I went to Al thinking, you know, it's not the best. He was like, "Yeah, mate, that's frostbite there. That's frostbite." He said, "You might be lucky, you might be frost nip. So if you can warm it up,
yeah,
it might go away." So I spent like 5 hours of the most painful sort of arm swinging warming up process, and when I took it off, I was like, eventually the pain stopped. Took it off, I was like, thank God for that. It was just a massive bubble on the end of my finger. No. And at that point, you either sort of, well, because it was a race, they were, I couldn't continue, so they pulled me out. But if you could keep it hidden, then in theory, you could carry on. But you risk, if it gets cold again, you risk, you know, Ranulf finds in the end of your finger. But so, mate, I always look at that as a bit of a successful failure, because we then went on and did the North Pole a couple of years later, which meant I had a better understanding of what my body was capable of.
What frostbite is.
Definitely don't get the todger out for more than 2 minutes. Can't afford to lose any more inches. But we did that. And then did Vietnam and Cambodia. So we did 1,000 miles across Vietnam and Cambodia on the bike after having... So I retired bike after 2012, got it out. Was that 2 years ago, 2016? So we did that. Cycled around the Alps. We went up to Base Camp Everest. Just did the coast-to-coast across Costa Rica. Yeah. So we did kayak, bike, trek.
How long is that? How far is that?
It's not far at all. It's only 400 kilometers, but it's like it's all jungle. So
speak to me in miles.
Slow miles. 250 miles, basically.
Something like that. Yeah. So mile it, like it's really low. And when you think about it, and I always underprepare for these things, like 250 miles. How long is that?
Whatever.
But it took us. So we did 1 day, which was like 12 miles. So not far, half marathon.
Yeah,
shouldn't take you long. Took 14 hours to get
because
you're going through like the jungle, so you got a dude out front, you got a little you got a little tribesman out front with a machete sort of wading through the jungle, and we're just like happily following. We got 20, so we took 20 people.
So you're gonna get attacked, he's the first one to go.
Yep, mate, definitely. Yeah. But there's this other, there was this other dude that we had with us who was and it was, I can never remember whether it's a naturist or a naturalist, not the one that's naked but the other one.
Yeah.
And he
one of them, yeah.
Naturist, no,
nature bloke.
Yeah, he loves it. Literally, he'd wander around on the track, tarantula, pick up a tarantula.
No.
He'd be going, look at the teeth on it, and he'd stick something in its mouth. He'd bullet ants. There's little beautiful... Essentially, in the jungle, if anything's pretty, it's deadly. He's like,
really?
He's like, look at this, it's beautiful. Oh, that's stinging, that's stinging. I was like, should you be holding it then?
Yeah, mate,
it was amazing. One of the best experiences. So I've been lucky, and I've been able to do that all for the foundation. So we set up Lewis Moody Foundation.
How's that going?
Amazing. So we'll break the million raised this year. Hopefully.
Awesome.
Oh.
So it's been mate. It's like anything. I don't know what you boys are like. When you finish, you don't know what you're going to do. So you try things, don't you? And we set up the foundation because we lost a young lad who's 16. He's a from Sheffield rugby player, really talented kid, and it just spurned me and Annie to want to do something. And actually having that focus of the foundation, having no idea what we were doing when we set it up, we're like, how hard can it be again? So sort of approach like doing.
Let's get some stationery, don't you? And then you're done.
Get some caps. Pads. And but you know, four and a half years down the line now, we've learned every year we've learned something. We've got a little team of people that. That are incredible, that really do all the work.
Do you do
now.
Big challenges every year?
Or? So we do one challenge every year. Next year's so the final ones, so essentially we've done north, south, east and west. We've done north, east and west, and we'll finish with south this year. And have a company called Wyco that essentially help support what we do. But South Pole will be 2 weeks on the ice. That'll be
do you have a website for people if they want to get involved?
Yeah, or? So the Lewis Moody Foundation. So just go to
.com.
Perfect. www.//.
And then delete web history.
Boat, yacht.
Yeah. Types. Yeah, so yacht company.
Yacht company. Yeah.
They're great, mate. They're absolutely...
Apparently great fellas, actually. Because Gruy knows them as well, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. So we took Gruy and Josh to do the North Pole.
Oh, that's right.
And the Wyco boys, you know, essentially funded that trip. So they're adventurous dudes. You know, you've got Charlie and Gary. Gary's, you know, they're both run the company. Gary's straight as they come, ship's captain, you know, moisturising. Wears the paper.
Sounds like me.
Cigar in the morning, smoking jacket. Charlie is absolutely bonkers, you know. But they work really well together, and they just love an adventure. So taking those two boys out, and the best bit was living in the tent with them. So you get to know them, you know. Never really know someone until you spend a bit of time with them like that. And three of us in a tent.
So if you're at bell end, it's awkward.
It's brutally awkward.
I remember...
I was probably the bell end, sadly. It was like, I just never got told.
Have you stayed in a tent? Have you ever stayed in a tent?
That bike ride, we stayed in a tent every night.
Did you?
Yeah.
What, so you weren't travel lodging or...
No, we stayed in a tent on the frigging floor, mate. Oh. Every night. stay in a little single
I stayed in one. I did a cycle before, and I stayed in one. And when you're not used to cycling, like, you're obviously moving your muscles, aren't you? Different muscles, they start to ache. And I remember after the first day of cycling, we were staying in a tent, I needed a wee in the middle of the night. And it was in Yosemite, so there's loads of bears, so I didn't really want to go walk into the toilet. So I just tried to lean outside the front of the tent to do a wee, and I got real bad cramp in my hamstring as I was doing it. Just went all over me. Just pissed all over myself.
There's a joke coming there.
Yeah, no.
Just pissed on myself.
Yeah. And that's my experience of living in a tent.
When you're in a tent, that stuff's awkward, isn't it? One of the lads
It's horrible.
One of the lads we had to sleep next to for the 9 days, he had this like hoop routine. And you sort of live in condensed, and it's minus 40 outside. So you do all your cooking, everything in the tent. And you're washing everything. There's no showers, whatever. Mm. So one of the boys had this thing called his hoop routine. So every night, he'd paint a picture, hopefully, with that. But so we'd be having food and the captain would be next to us from Waiko, and we'd be having the hot chocolates, getting the food ready, all at the bottom of the tent. And the next thing you know, you lean over, and one of my tent companions was going through his hoop routine, which meant sort of stripping off and getting the wet wipes out and cleansing himself in the middle of the tent whilst we're eating our food. We're like,
yeah,
bro,
what are you doing? It's like nonchalant, happy as Larry, as if it's just the most normal thing in the world. And we're both like, he's then throwing, you know, the used loo roll out the tent, essentially. And in the morning, everyone has a job, don't they? So the other companion in the tent had to go cleaning the sort of the end of the tent out, only to realize when he was picking the stuff up, and it gets cold, doesn't it? And it was like frozen to the end of his glove. He realised it was Al's hoop paper. He was like, get it off. Oh, man, it was me.
Amazing. You get quite comfortable with people. You have to, don't you?
Yeah. Really. But I always think of those trips. Like, I often think about the best bits would be in the tent. The tough bits are obviously you trekking and walking and pulling all your gear and all that sort of stuff. But the thing that fills me with nerves is knowing that you are in this situation where you have to keep moving and certain things have to happen constantly in a certain order and that sort of stuff. And the relentlessness of it, you can get your head around because you're only there for a number of days or weeks or whatever, so it's not for the rest of your life. But you don't want to be that guy that holds people up. That's what would make me nervous. And I know that I'm just not physically gifted at all, unless you need something lifting off the floor. Yeah. So I would be the guy holding people up. That's what, like, the bike ride didn't matter because you could just piss off and I'd just get in later and miss the afternoon.
But the beauty of our challenges is that it's never a race. So, you know, I get that it's a race, but it's only ever about getting everyone to the end.
Because you're sort of like number 25 from SAS. Who dares? Who dares wins?
Well, no, on the face of it,
you're still in it. You're still
the
in
slowest,
it.
Slowest, mentally weak, but he will finish in the end.
Yeah.
Do you watch SAS Who Dares Wins?
I haven't actually. No.
Mudos. It is the, you know, like all these shows are the same. It's like, we're going to beast people and
it's essentially reality TV, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's this one, SAS Who Dares Wins, honestly, Mudos, is the, I'm going to say this now.
Is it Foxy?
Yeah, Foxy. You know, because, you know, through maybe Bremont stuff, you might see the top bloke, but it is the best program on British television at the moment. It is, and they've got three series to go to look back on.
Are they
catch
sponsoring
up.
This? Are they?
No, they're not. It's not as good as Channel 5 of your Premiership highlights. midnight through till 4.
I'll watch that. I will watch
it's
that.
So later. You would love it, Mudos, because they're not just knobs and they're not just aggressive.
Yeah,
they're good fellas, but they push people really hard. They're good fellas. They're harsh with them, but they're good guys. And
I always love the idea of doing something like that. But the thought of being on a reality TV program.
But they've got, but it's not like that, though. You would just be getting on with the drills.
Yeah.
And I honestly think they should do, whether you call it, I was thinking this last night because I was watching reruns of it, and I was thinking they should do a, if you call it celebrity or whatever, they should do it, and they should get guys from different sports. And I was honestly thinking, Guy Mercer from Bath Rugby, but no one would know who he was outside. But he's just a tough bastard who would carry on. There's loads of those around. But I was thinking you would be perfect because people know your stuff, and you give you 6 months to train for it. But get yourself in the shape you want to be in. Mate, you would love it, Mudos.
I'd probably pull a calf in the first few seconds. Stretcher. Medic.
Yeah. Dislocate your shoulder. There's a few of them.
And the guy had like patellar tendonitis, didn't he? Or
bursitis. Yeah.
But yeah, they obviously pick a random bunch because some give up like after one day of beasting. They just walk out. They give them.
You'd
number.
Enjoy that, Shanks, wouldn't
no,
you?
No, I wouldn't. No.
Mudos. We did a marine. We did a military camp.
No, we talk about this nearly every episode. how to say.
And these guys, they basically remember Mark Bennett, who worked with Mike Ford. Yeah, he was they called Mindset Evolution or something. But they basically got us in for 7 days when we were at Sarries, and beasted us, sleep deprivation, everyone's done those camps, but we did one for 7 days and seven nights, and it was genuinely horrific. Like, even Hilly still talks about it as the worst thing he ever did. It was horrific. Like, no fun, just brutal, no sleep, horrendous. And they did this thing on the last day, and it was like, right, this is the ultimate test. We're basically going to push you to the limit, and at some point you're going to fold.
Mm.
And it's just how quickly your body language, and as soon as your body language looks weak, we're pulling you out, even if you haven't folded. So, you know, you need to be tough, because it, you know, and basically they pulled Shanks out after about 15 seconds. And then his individual report was, Shanks will never be a team player. He's mentally weak. His body language is terrible. He will never make it.
Yeah, it's because I was at Saracens. Like
70 caps. Oh. And with me, they were like, Flat's got a great attitude. He's going to get a million caps.
Cardiff toughened me up a bit.
That's nice. Yeah. Didn't Jerry have one of those with England?
Jerry's would have been terrible as well.
Yeah there we are.
He had something like that.
There
just
we are.
Not interested.
So, great players.
Yeah. Lions World's legends. Best. Yeah, something like that. So these days, the foundation takes up a huge amount of time, does it? Is that kind of, if someone said, what do you do now?
Yeah.
I always think it's a tricky question for us lot, unless you've got a 9-to-5, because it's different stuff.
Yeah.
But what do you do these days?
So the foundation, certainly when I first retired, the foundation took up a huge amount of our time, but we've now got it to a point, you know, fantastically, where we've got a small team. So actually a lot of the work that needs admin and
it's
an actual skill set is not,
PowerPoint
is pushed towards someone that's capable of that. Not
when
me.
They need someone to tackle something with their face.
But so we do, I don't know, it's probably 30% of my time's on that now. We set up a company about 3 years ago called Mad Dog Sport.
Yeah.
Beautifully named, but so we put sixth form rugby programs into state schools as well.
Okay.
Not as elite pathways, but as a way of retaining kids into sixth form education. So government drive and the RFU about keeping kids into that 16, 24 age group that drop out, and then trying to keep them
the age group, isn't
sport.
It?
It's a question for you. It's my question. How does a name of Lewis Walton Moody get from Bracknell get nicknamed Mad Dog?
Mate,
why Walton as well?
I actually had a few other nicknames when I was a kid, and obviously with Walton.
Was your mum and dad fan of the Waltons?
They loved it.
Couldn't call you John Boy.
John Boy, Mary Lou. Mate, that was every bloody nickname I had when I was at school. I was that parents probably Judas me there. But
yeah.
It turned out I was named after my great granddad when I found out, and he was.
Yeah.
This probably won't interest you at all, but I'm a World War One Norse.
Yeah, I love the war. I probably know more
you
about
love
World
the war.
War
II. Yeah, love war. Get me out there.
It's just beautiful. I prefer two.
Yeah.
I love finding out about
the cold
them.
One. I
love.
I prefer the one on terror. Yeah.
Oh, the one in the sea. That's
yeah. Anyway, your one. Granddad.
Also love peace.
Yeah, but so it turned out I was named after him, and he was a part of the British Expeditionary Force. This is proper boring.
That's good.
They went in 1914, so he was a regular soldier. He was a part of the first Allied group that met the Germans in 1914. So,
wow.
So when I learned that, I was a little bit more happy about the Walton bit of the name. But
yeah, that's
up until that point.
Because everyone knows about World War II and, you know, obviously why we went to war, but not many people know about why we went to war in World War One.
No,
it was to do with some. It was to do with an assassination of someone.
It was
who?
Yeah,
I can't. It was.
It was Franz Ferdinand.
Yeah.
Ferdinand, as in Franz Ferdinand, not the band.
Oh, right.
Is it Archduke Franz Ferdinand?
Yeah, that's right. And
is there a line? Is there a gap?
No.
Exactly.
No.
Yeah, that's what I'm waiting for.
No.
Yeah. War. Anyway, what is it good for?
Yeah.
I remember, Mudos, years ago, I was reading this book, and you said, "What's that book?" And it was called something like The Long Silence, but it was about the period where, I think it was post-World War One, where basically the British public took a huge amount of time to recover because they lost a generation of men, you know, and they lost a generation of workers and fathers and husbands and sons and all that stuff. And it's this fascinating book. And I remember you saying, I would love to read that. And I was like, yeah, of course you would.
Mm.
And you were like, I would love to read that. And I remember finishing it on a plane and saying, I'll give this to Mudos. We're on a team trip. I'll give this to Mudos when we get off the plane. And I left it on the plane all those years ago.
Mm. Yeah.
So I often, once a year, I probably see you, or once a month, I'll see you tweet something or whatever it is, and I'll think, I must order that book on Amazon and give it to you.
Oh, mate, that's
and
very kind.
I haven't done it, but I will do it.
Yeah, do.
It.
I would love that.
Really
I got to do something really cool last 2 weeks ago. I went to France, so it was a sort of a pilgrimage thing. But one of my roles with the RFU is their Great War ambassador.
Oh,
so
cool.
I got to go and do a route around France and Belgium, sort of commemorating every England international that died during the war. So it was 22 wow. commemorated in France and Belgium, amazing. 27 in total. For me, it is amazing to do. I mean, it's so 100 years ago now, and it seems, you know, it just doesn't seem that long ago. But when you say 100 years, it's a long time, four generations. But when you're there and you see him and you've got the stories, and there's this one bloke, Finlatter Todd, and there's a great picture, you know, he's got proper curly moustache,
yeah.
trilby, bright purple, green and ridiculous coloured shirt. And, yeah. and in his little synopsis, he was a lion. He only had like two England caps, I think. But it had the captain on the tour, so not Todd, but his captain decided they had to get strict with the players and confine Todd to only four champagnes pre-game to make sure that he could perform.
Yeah. Was he playing bar bars?
Oh, mate, it was amazing. But, you know, you build an image like that.
Ian Bolshaw, did you say? Todd Bolshaw.
But, mate, it was.
You know, I bet, mate. Like, especially, like, the manner in which they fought as well, like, in the trenches.
Because they're ultimately, I mean, we're going to sound really base now, but what you're talking about is, it's like a long time ago, and and for a lot of people it's forgotten, and a lot of people didn't know about it, but I don't know enough about it, but it's so significant that it's literally responsible for these lovely lives we live today. And these are lads like us walking into shitty, muddy fields with bugger all equipment, no computers or radar, you know, not much communication. They've got a gun and a knife, whatever it was, and they are literally fighting people with guns. Yeah. It's like,
and the rugby boys were the first to sign up as well. Like all of them en masse, like 1914 England side, they all signed up.
Tough bastards, like, mate.
Yeah, Roslyn Park. They all signed up. And there was a great story about. I'll go on for ages. So this is probably the last thing you want in your podcast.
No,
he pressed pause about 20 minutes ago.
He edited. It's all gone. But there were two of them called.
Give us a couple of seconds. Go. I can always cut it out then.
So there's a guy, like, great name. I remember because of the name, like Lancelot Noel Slowcock. I mean, genius. I mean, it sticks in the memory, right? But I'm like, that is a great name. So anyway, looking into the story, there's another guy called Jack King. But both England internationals, different regiments. One decides he's at home doing nothing, essentially wants to be out on the front with the rest of them, meets his English teammate, Slowcock. And he says, look, we're going off, why don't you transfer? So he transfers to the Liverpool Scottish Regiment, and they all go off to the Somme, and essentially him, so King and Slowcock die in the same battle on the same day, attacking, is it Guillemot Farm? So never, the grave's unknown, so they're commemorated on Teep Farm Memorial. But you just think, I always have that, maybe it's a romantic vision, but the guys like that, you know, when you go out onto the rugby pitch, there's always... I enjoy the game. The thing I miss is that I can't like run around and like I can't jump in front of, you know, a steam train or
can't
to help
twat
my mate.
People
yeah,
insane
can't, yeah, can't, yeah, yeah. If you have a disagreement, you can't, you know, bop them on the nose anymore, or slam them through a table, or send them an email first, and then it's just changed, isn't it? That sort of camaraderie, but you can understand why they went out together. But to think that they sort of both died in that same battle, you can almost, I get that sort of image of them going over the top together. You know, sort of charging. Yeah. But anyway.
It's that brotherhood, isn't it? And it's
a brotherhood.
It's amplified in war, of course it is, but it's what rugby players love mainly. Yeah. And you'll get it whenever you walk anywhere and someone recognises you, one in three people who say hello will ask you if you miss it. And what, you know, because it's funny you're here because everyone gets asked that all the time. My answer is always, shit, no. God, absolutely not. Because for whatever reason, I don't miss it. I loved it when I did it, but I got hurt a lot and... I don't miss the pressure of knowing I was about to play with injuries and I wasn't good enough anymore and that sort of stuff. But I always say there's only one player, and I don't know this for sure, I always say there's only one player I reckon might miss it, and that's you. That's Mudos. Because you just used to love. I love slamming around, but not to the same point that you did.
I miss it every day, actually. And I think I spent probably the first 3 or 4 years just totally denying the fact that I missed it to try and like blank it out.
Yeah.
But like, it sort of creeps up on you. It's only the last few years.
Do you dream about it a lot? I dream about rugby all the time.
Do you?
Like stuff like forgetting my gum shield or... No, honestly, like
being late for a meeting,
yeah, things like that. Oh, God. I dream about all the time, like in game, like being in games and stuff. And then,
yeah,
I literally never dream about it, bizarrely.
Really,
I think about it
all the time.
Do you?
I played touch for the first time, for a while yesterday.
Got
that camaraderie back. With my brothers. I loved it.
You sent me a picture last night with ice on your knee.
I loved it. It was so much fun. Because I don't do stuff like that.
Yeah.
And when you finish a game, like, and you just don't touch a ball for for ages and ages. As soon as you go back to it, you do start to enjoy it. And
you really enjoyed the touch, did you?
There's no contest. I mean, I was fucking, no, really good.
I've had a few games actually last year with touch. It is good fun. I was like, nothing compares, does it, to like properly smashing.
I was like Owen Farrell, like taking the ball really flat.
Yeah, and nice.
Like putting people through holes.
Yeah.
And then I was saying you were really good?
And I was like Josh Adams then on like an outside break, got around outside of the 50-year-old. Outside break, and then put my winger Bryn away.
Put Bryn away. Put the filthy feet on the old fella, then put Bryn away.
Went round Arthur and put Bryn away.
Are you saying you can still do a job?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Put me up with a crane like that and drop me in the Principality. I'll do a job for you against
Scotland. I love those games. Have you boys played any game? Any like proper games?
I did a game. I played in Gareth Steenson's testimonial at Sandy Park in front of 9,000 people in a size medium jersey, which is a stitch up. Me and Adam Blackie Boot both had mediums, twats.
Yeah.
But I must say, like, it's just my... I didn't hurt my Achilles when I was playing. My Achilles... Genuinely, the last few weeks it started to feel better, but that's since August.
Mm.
So it's taken that long and it just hurt for months. And so I got an email from the old Classic Lions yesterday and I said, I'm not playing any of the games anymore. I can't play anymore. But I must say, I loved it. It was no scrum, uncontested scrums and no jackaling at the breakdown to protect your neck and shoulder. Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, it was full on.
So what do you do then?
And chase
the ball.
You sledge.
You said,
it was full on, standard.
Hey. I'm guard.
But full on tackling and ball carrying and stuff. And like a lot of the Chiefs first team lads played, like Jack Noel played and Ben Moon and that played. And it was full on smashing each other. And it was brilliant.
See, I wouldn't like that. I don't want to tackle.
I'm the sort of person that everyone hates in those games as well because I can't not be super keen.
You're the sort of person everyone hated in pro games.
Yeah, that's a fair
and
point,
in pro training.
Fair point, yeah.
And you said you played touch just now. And I got told that about a year ago that you were training up at Bradford and Avon Rugby Club and you were smashing people on a Tuesday night. Is that true?
Well,
some young pup thinks he's the man getting nailed.
They had to be taught. No, but it was about 4 years ago and I went up there because my brother-in-law wanted to play, so I went up, took him up to join in training and they sort of coerced me. They asked me if I wanted to do some coaching.
You already had your boots on.
And do you know what? It was wicked. I loved it. And I learned a huge amount about myself and coaching up there and actually how not to do it because, you know, you have this vision of how you were taught and that'll work. And, you know, I definitely did it all wrong. But there were times when we were doing a couple of sessions and the boys weren't quite getting it.
Is that when the 10 was trying to kick the ball out and you were charging down this like stationary leg?
Do it like this. Target the planted knee.
Target the medial.
Yeah, so no, I was definitely a bad example for them. But it was a lot of fun and I did play. I said to him, look, if they reached a certain target during the year, I'll play during the last game, which I stuck true to. The boys were awesome up at Bradford, I have to admit. It's like any club though, isn't it? You know,
they're all good lads.
They do it for the right reasons. They love the game. So I came on. So I said I would play 20 minutes the last game and there was an injury. So I came on a little bit earlier. I thought if I do 10 minutes at like just after into the second half, then I'll come off and I'll do 10 minutes at the end sort of thing.
Yeah.
So came on. And
couldn't go off
within 45 seconds. I was sin-binned. Within 45 seconds, it was probably the best turnover I've ever done.
Oh, really?
It was a technicality. I think it was
a deliberate knock on or something.
Verbal abuse of the officials.
It was worse because it was just a technicality, and it was a brilliant turnover. But the ref had warned the boys apparently prior to this about 10 times about leaving the ball alone.
Okay,
so I got his wrath. Let's just say I wasn't very happy. I tried to keep my cool. I went off. And when I came back on again, the next play that I was involved in was a kickoff.
Oh, and no.
So literally...
Oh, no, went, the worst. The went, worst guy. To
I went hell for leather. I went hell for leather. And the bloke called mine. And I must have hit him about 5 minutes before the ball landed. And in all fairness, I definitely should have been sent. It wasn't because I was intending to hit him before the ball out. I just completely timed it. And I was raging still from being sent off. And so that was sort of my second retirement, basically, after that. I just realised the game.
I'm a bit at Farley House with Bath. And... we'll talk about Tigers in a minute and we'll move on to Bath a little bit, but I remember training on the 3G up there and you know, we're quite, Farley House was quite new then and whatever, and you'd been injured for a bit, and I think your shoulder was knackered, which ultimately was at the ultimately what ended
it. Was,
and you came back out to train with us. You hadn't been out for ages, and we were dicking around and introducing ourselves and saying, hi, you know, this is Andy Beattie. And Beast was like, my name's Andy. You're like, hello, welcome back. And we're doing like non-contact, and you've even got bib on, or it's grip or whatever it was, which doesn't mean anything, but you've got a bib on, which is no one hit Mudos. It's like a green bib or whatever, or a yellow bib. No contact, don't hit Mudos. And then Beast like gets this ball, went goes to catch it and give it, and you just absolutely fucking lance him. You just like nailed this massive bloke. And I was like, and we were standing over you, we're like, Mudos, that's why you're injured, mate. Just, just have one day, but you couldn't. And that's the point. Really, that's why you got 71 caps. It wasn't because you were, you know,
the most skillful.
Well, no, but you had a load of skill, but it, you weren't there for your finesse, were you? There because you were, you just fucking loved smashing people who play for the other team, basically.
Yeah. I wish I could have reined back in training like that, because one of my biggest regrets is actually, so when I came to Bath, was all I wanted to really do was have a couple of really nice seasons playing club rugby and actually away from the internationals. And I know the first year was you had the World Cup and Six Nations and stuff, which took me away, and I had, I think, a knee injury and an eye injury, you know, standard. And then after the World Cup, I was like, right, retire, just focus on Bath. I've got 2.5 years left, play some good rugby, hopefully have an impact there. And literally the first game back, I trying to tap tackle Classy's brother, Michael Clarkson's brother,
Eric Clarkson's,
fullback for Worcester. A tap tackle of all things, you know, obviously you said,
terrible for shoulders though, man.
And and that was it. I was done. I was always bitterly disappointed that I couldn't have done more at Bath and have more of an impact. So I think I only played like 18 games, you know. And when you move, you obviously moved clubs from Sarries to
desperate,
Bath.
Did you change?
You changed.
You got 34 games for Bath. Quantu.
Definitely wasn't that many.
No, it's not true.
It was 19.
All right. But you went Sarries to Cardiff, didn't you? And
yeah.
But you, when you arrive at a new club, you just desperately want to make... Yeah. If you're going to get injured, which you are, you want to have got a lot of credit in the bank first, basically.
Yeah,
that's it.
So, mate, so if I could look back on anything in my career, say I wish I could have reined it back in the training towards the latter stages, because...
Yeah, but...
But then I wouldn't have been me, and I wouldn't have enjoyed it, but... But that's, you know, in hindsight, you've got some reflections, haven't you? But
you, mate, so when you think, let's go back to Leicester Tigers a bit.
No.
Okay, so let's move on. Hey, you want to have a break, do you? All right. So Mudos, let's talk about Leicester Tigers. You were there for a long time. You won loads and loads and loads of stuff. When you look back on your time there, do you have individual games or memories or people that sort of stand out? Because I just remember John Connolly, the old Aussie boss who was our DOR at Bath for a while, and it's absolutely legend, saying when you finish your career, it's just one big blur except for your best mates, your biggest wins and your biggest losses. The rest is a blur. So when you think back of all your years at Leicester, how do you feel about those?
Mate, I loved playing at Leicester. You know, leaving the game is quite hard, but there's always characters, you know, things that you remember. Bizarrely, one was about Dan Hipkiss. Remember his first game coming in as an 18-year-old, he's dead nervous, really shy, super shy, and Austin was in the team, and obviously Austin's probably not the greatest motivator of young new players coming through.
Imagine.
But Dan, you know, Dan had a huge amount of admiration for most of those senior players, and I remember him coming in and Austin wandering over to him, sat next to him in that first game, and goes, "All right, Dan, you nervous?" Dan was like, "Yep, I am nervous." Austin's reply was, "You should be, because you're shit." That was, honest to God, the comment that he told a nervous 18-year-old schoolboy before his first Premiership game.
Now get up there and don't let your family down.
Yeah. I mean, it did make me laugh at the time. But there are things that, it was things like that that stick in your head that no one has the sort of, that no one sees from the outside, and the moments in the change room after and before the game, you know, when boys are being sick, when they're banging their heads. I remember playing Sail Away, you know, in the early 90s.
Huh? I just said Enya.
Enya, you know, Enya. Sail Away, Sail Away. Sorry, Mudos. He's a bell end.
I phased you.
He doesn't get it.
Yeah.
So you're playing Sail Away, lovely changing rooms.
Yeah. And the boys were doing a team talk anyway, so you know when they sort of gather everyone in for a huddle, and Jono's just starting to rant, and I literally jumped up out of my seat, and there was this massive like pipe in the corner. Smashed my head through this pipe.
That's so you.
Put me back down in the seat. I was like 19 years old, and the boys just stood there and like, and was just like looking at me heaped in the corner. And then I got up and got back into the huddle, and Jono goes, "That's it, lads. That's what we need." I don't know why he said that or what it meant. I think he was just trying to make me feel better. I just sat there like a little trickle of blood pouring out of my head. I'm so embarrassed.
It's, first of many papers.
It was quite competitive though, wasn't it, when you first joined Leicester? You obviously had Neil back there.
Yeah.
Gustard.
Guzzy, Will Johnson. Curry, Will Johnson. Yeah. Mate, it was an awesome team.
I always thought Will Johnson was a really good player, actually.
Mate, it was awesome. Proper, solid, like,
really good player.
Team.
Josh Cronfeld was there for a bit as well, wasn't he?
Josh was there.
Yeah.
Couldn't get in ahead of Mood Austin Backy, though, could he? Keep it serious. It's like when you boys signed Frank Tournaire, like 80, 85 French caps, couldn't get in the team because you had Daz Garforth. And actually, on paper, that's ridiculous. But no, when you've played against Daz Garforth for 15 minutes, I'd pick him now.
God, mate. machine.
Just someone else.
I actually randomly saw him in Bath.
So did I, actually, there. Yeah.
Yeah, I think his daughter is at the...
Yeah, he texted me and was like, "Do you know anywhere that his daughter lives in Bath? Do you know anywhere rent a flat off," sort of thing. And it got down to the point where I couldn't find anyone that had a spare flat that was ready at the time. And I said to Alex, I was like, this woman's been renting this flat off us in Bath for like, it's like 10 or 15 years now, right? She's just been there forever. And it was that she's most reliable, never a problem, fixes stuff herself, pays the rent on time. And I was like, there's this weird thing coming over me where I will kick her out to do Darren Garforth a favour, even though we're not mates. And he was an absolute asshole to me when we played.
Yeah,
he was just, I mean, you know, just vile, but a great bloke,
being.
It's funny, I would have done it. If she had let me, I would have done it.
Isn't it funny the different characters that you are there? Like the bloke that... Darren Garforth, the rugby player, and Darren Garforth, the bloke, too, mate. Yeah. He's a lovely human being.
Lovely bloke.
Nasty, horrible rugby player.
Shit, he was nasty, mate. I mean, he wasn't you're running across the field and someone knocks you out from behind. He wasn't that.
Yeah.
He was, "I'm going to look you in the eye and knock you out, and then I'm going to look you in the eye and knock you out again." And I remember playing against you boys, and we had Julian White, who was new on the scene, and he was rock hard, and he ended up playing for Tigers for years and whatever. And it was the first kickoff. And the ball went up, and Whitey lifted Gruey. And, you know, you're playing against Whitey and Gruey. They're pretty tough boys. And you wouldn't necessarily start a fight with them. But Darren Garforth ran in from the first kickoff, and the first thing he did was just swing a right hand from the kickoff straight to Julian White. Massive punch up. He just couldn't contain himself. He'd been told all week that Julian White was the hardest, and he couldn't contain himself, and he just attacked him on the first whistle. Yeah. Julian loved that, like, you know.
Yeah.
And the punches Whitey landed probably got him a contract at Tigers.
The two hardest men probably ever to play the game in the front. They were amazing.
We had a good question here. We had loads of questions in Mudos. Paul Harris on Twitter says, "What was the session like on the Monday morning in Leicester after you had a punch up with Tuolangi at Twickenham?"
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what it was? It was fine. It wasn't a Monday morning, because Mondays, you know, just weights and blah, isn't it? So we all got me and Alex got called into the office, and after the fight, it was fine because we were in the tunnel. Obviously, I'd lost my head a touch, and thrown about.
But you were mates as well, weren't you?
Yeah, we were. Yeah,
sort of
teammates.
Yeah,
and
got with each other.
Yeah, but you know, we shook hands in the tunnel. And it was all done. You know, when you walk around that corner and you'd been sent off for Twickenham, you walk around that corner in the tunnel, it wasn't like now where you've got thousands of people, you know, around. There was just Alex Tuolangi. There's just enormous shadow, this 18-stone behemoth.
Predator.
Like, I mean, he's a scary, terrifying human being, really. Yeah. And I walked around the corner of the tunnel, and he was just stood in the middle of the tunnel facing me. I was like,
here it goes again.
This is gonna kick off.
My studs are really slippy. Should put trainers on. But, yeah. Should put my shot put discus shoes on.
Put your house key in between your knuckles.
But you wonder, mate, what what I loved about it was that we wandered down and it could have gone proper nasty, couldn't it? But actually he just stuck his hand out. I stuck my hand out. Little handshake, a bit of a cuddle.
Yeah.
And it was all good, and we went up afterwards and it was fine, it was sorted. And then we come to training on Monday and the club called us in and they were like, "Right, you two are Muppets, yeah, we know. Fine three grand.
Oh, punchy.
And I was properly gutted at the time, especially when I found I was the only
three grand, isn't it? Oh, no, sorry, yeah, that's
not about the 3 grand. I was gutted about that, but I was more gutted. the only Englishman out of all. I mean, we talked about some nasty people that played the game, but I was the only person ever to be sent off for Twickenham until Elliot Daly, obviously.
Elliot.
That was pretty disappointing.
Wasn't quite the same though, was it? I someone out in the air.
Accidentally ran into someone.
No, the thing is, Shane, what the shame is, I was in a box with Mudos that day when Elliot Daly did that, and Mudos was in the stand shouting, off, off, off. Get the fucker off.
But the game's changed massively, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Well, I remember hearing
I think you still get a red for that, mind. It's not changed that much.
Yeah, that's true.
We used to hear stories about the Leicester environment, and it was like ahead of its time in its sort of intensity and all that sort of stuff, but it was famous for it. And yeah, I'm guessing that with guys like, we know Daz Garforth and those boys, and Cockers and Nobby and those guys there, and Dorian West, they're tough boys and they don't mind a scrap and all that.
Mm.
But I always imagined that Jono is a particularly staunch individual, but you lose your head sometimes, which is, again, why you're Mad Dog and why you got all these caps and that sort of stuff. But I'm imagining that at some point you would have had a scrap with Jono. And did you? And how did it go?
Well, mate, calling it a scrap is not a fair summary of what actually happened, but we did. I mean, but you know, training at Leicester, Wednesdays were defence sessions, and that was the thing that I struggled with when I came to Bath, because you know it was a lot more low key in terms of
no full metal jacket.
Yeah,
training.
There was no full bish, and that and having when you've grown up in that environment, it's very difficult to disengage from it. But Leicester was synonymous. Wednesdays was defence session, and it would invariably end in a fight somewhere or other. And if it didn't, quite frankly, most of the boys didn't feel they were ready for the game at the weekend.
Yeah.
And I mean, I did. So I did. I came back from one injury, and I'd been out for a year with it, whatever it was, and came back. And Alex Tuolangi, who I was holding the pads in the second team, first team, Jono was running through plays. It wasn't going so well, so he sort of pulled the boys in, gave them a bit of a talking to. So next play, Alex came out, got the ball, ran through, I don't know, five or six lads, sort of handing them off left, right and centre. And you know, the point of a pad is that, okay.
So annoying.
I know, and he could have run through us anyway, right? Even if we didn't have the pads. Yeah. It was full on, he could have run through us. Be a good lad
and stop when you get tagged.
Yeah, but so he'd obviously just got the bit between his teeth because the team had a dressing down from Jono. Anyway, so I took sort of, you know, I saw that as a bit of a problem and threw my pad down as he was sprinting off towards the try line. Literally, he was doing a Chris Ashton swallow dive over the try line. And it probably looked from behind like I tried to punch him, but all I did was punch the ball out of his hand because he was holding it like that. So I flew, punched the ball out of his hand so they didn't score, which obviously annoyed the tits off of Jono because he'd just given him a roasting, right, let's make sure we get this one right and score.
Yeah.
I've just scuppered that. And let's just say we had, you know, we sort of had a disagreement, and Jono was like holding me with one hand, and I was holding him, looking at him, and I'm only like 24 at this time, looking up at Martin Johnson, who's 6'9", and I don't know what either of us are saying, but you know, it wasn't complimentary anyway. And and all I was thinking
what is that cologne?
Yeah, yeah. All I was thinking as we were looking at each other was, I wish I hadn't held him with my right hand, because at some point one of us is going to have to throw a punch, and if I want to stand a chance, I need to get in first.
Can't have an open hand slap.
Have you ever tried throwing a punch with a left hand?
I mean, no point.
No, it's virtually. No, I mean, it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
And as I was thinking that, he punched me anyway, so I fell over. So like, it wasn't a fight at all.
He just knocked you out.
Yeah,
you out,
it was thankfully that. Alex's brother Henry Tuolangi was like stood between us at the time, so the only reason I didn't hit the deck was because Henry thankfully was holding on to me.
But that's actually a question from Liam Kenny, wants to know the best.
Punching around Henry Tuolangi is quite a good effort actually. Yeah. Just like driving a bus, isn't it?
But the best bit about it was that I'd been out for a year. Actually, after that, it meant I was fully back into the session. I felt like I'd been anointed back into the team.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jono stuck his head in the change room afterwards because I can't really remember much of the rest of the session. and he felt awful because obviously I'd been out for ages, and then he maybe panicked that he'd put me out for longer, but I was fine. And he stuck his head in. He was like, "Oh, Moodle, sorry about that." I was, mate, don't worry. I loved it.
Do it again if you want.
It's insane, isn't it? The things that you miss. And
yeah.
I loved, because in normal life, you don't have that element of physicality anymore. The competition, you know, talking about pot plants with the missus, you know, it's not the same, is it?
No, it's not.
Going and getting a latte.
Do you have a glass eye? No, seriously.
Mad eye Moody. No.
I don't know. We had a tweet from Les Hipkins to say, what does he do with his glass eye?
That's not Danny Hipkins' alter ego.
I got, all right. When the old Harry Potter stuff came out, I do have a lazy eye. So when I get tired, I squint and my eye wanders.
Oh, does it?
The mad eye. The mad,
so you got
the
character. Okay, so you got a wandering eye.
The character, mad eye Moody.
We've had a question from James Haskell as well.
Yeah,
this is sort of three parts to it. Four parts. First off, why are you such
Did
a Norse? No, it's the dog snoring. Yeah. Why are you such a Norse? That's the first question.
Is that off the pitch or on the pitch, yeah, or in general?
Both.
Born that way.
Why would you always go full on into non-contact sessions? I think you've answered that.
Yeah.
You haven't answered. Did you ever have an original thought, or did Jono put his hand up your ass and work your mouth like a puppet?
Oh, he is a penis, isn't he?
Did tackling with your face prolong or shorten your career?
Mate, he should know about it. He should know about tackling with his face.
He should be throwing stones.
Do you know what? James Haskell is one of life's wonderful characters, isn't he?
But he is,
I don't know where to go with that. To be fair, he used to call me Leatherface because I did make a bit of a habit of tackling with my face. But then again, I've never been, you know, knocked out by Danny Cipriani carrying the ball into him. So, yeah.
And you still got a full head of hair whilst his lid is three or four cuts away from
Burns
nothing.
And Freddie Burns knocked him out.
Freddie Burns, not Cipriani. Yeah, it was Freddie Burns.
Freddie said to me before the game, if Haskell comes anywhere near me, I will knock him out.
He's
a bell and I'll knock him out.
He'd only been on 30 seconds as well.
Freddie waited for him to come on and he bashed him.
Here comes the big dog.
And when Haskell came on, I told Freddie where I was sitting in like the media seats at the Rico. He looked up to me. He pointed at me and he did that throat cutting thing and pointed at Haskell. He's like, I'm going to do him. And then he did him, knocked him out.
Mate, I was sat next to Freddie's brother in the stand. It was amazing. He was absolutely loving it. Yeah.
They're good boys, aren't they, the Burnses? They are. Except Freddie.
It couldn't have happened to
him. And you wear your socks up as well. It's not like a fashion, you know, style where you wear your socks down like Haskell does.
Oh, I see what you mean. Oh, good. Yeah. Like a trademark.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Darryl Morris.
That's old school, that, isn't he?
Back, I know, those boys doing it now.
I had a couple of seasons where I had to wear socks down.
Yeah, but you've got massive calves, though.
They didn't fit over my calves.
Yeah.
So depending what socks we got from sponsors and stuff, it was in the end I'd buy my own like £2.50 ones that were super elastic, like fit anyone, but I didn't have the sponsors in, so I wasn't allowed to wear them. So if the sponsors came in, basically the longer the sponsor, so remember at Saracens, it was like saracens.com.
Yeah.
And there was, because there's more thread being embroidered into the sock, it tightens the sock up, so I didn't fit. FYI.
He's quite a good one.
No, don't do that.
Ed Hudson. Ship player, big calves.
Ed Hudson on Twitter wants to know best and worst roommate at Bath.
At Bath?
Yeah.
Or ever. Just make that.
Yeah,
ever.
I don't remember having many at Bath because I didn't last.
Because you roomed on your own.
Yeah.
Senior player.
Yeah.
Best and worst. Worst probably had to be Austin. Just horrendous. Bed flipped.
All
sorts of weird. Bed flipping is where, you know, you're having a little rest and
someone comes up and tips you up.
Yeah, bed flips you.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Just what you want in between games. There's nothing you can do either. I mean, it's funny, in all fairness. I've done it. It's not funny when it's you, though. That is the important thing to remember.
I remember you in your time at Bath and when with Leicester, but probably about four or five times you've Rochambeau'd me in the bollocks and whacked me in the nuts. But I got off lightly because I must have seen you do it to Gruy 20 times. Do you still whack people in the nuts when just for fun?
Not as much because my kids started doing it to me.
It hurts, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can't really do it to Pete. You can't really do it to mates outside rugby either because some of them don't get it.
Yeah, it does.
You're dropping the kids off at school, kicking someone in the nuts and behind.
There's so many things from the game that don't seem to cross over into normal life.
No.
You have to find out the hard
way. Gouging.
Gruy, mate. I love Gruy. He was talking about roommates. we had a trip down to Bath, and Gruy's like, you know, probably one of the hardest blokes I've ever played with, if not the hardest. And Julian White, and I got on really well with both of them. And surprisingly, they were the two that I'd sort of target my my cheap shots and pranks on. And I remember Julian White left his door open one day, and I'd got a key to Gruy's room, so I went into Gruy's room first, opened the door, just like turned the lights off, hid in the bathroom, And as he came in, obviously like completely nonchalant, no idea what's going on, I just jump out from the darkness and go, danger, at the time.
Unagi.
Like, yeah, simple things. And like, you've got Julian White and Dave Grohl, two of the hardest men that have ever played. But Gru's reaction was absolutely amazing because he literally screamed and he fell into the cupboard, literally fell over into the cupboard. He's like rolling around. Oh, do you twat? And I was laughing so much, I sprinted out before he could get me. And then I went to Whitey's room and he'd left it open. And I called him just to see where he was. I was like, mate, do you want a game of pool? He's like, no, I'm going back to my room. I was like, perfect. And so the same thing, hid in the bathroom, pitch black. Whitey comes in, he's on his phone. So literally, totally zoned out. I was like, danger. As I said the word danger, he literally turned at me with the evil eye, firmly gripped me around the throat and like pile drove me back into the cupboard. I was like, who has a reaction like that? Yeah. Who has? How is that a normal reaction?
Proper, they're both properly our blood. Yeah. Navy SEALs. Proper, whatever it is, type XY, whatever, mate. He's proper aggressive alpha.
You know, like with water bottles, you know, they've got like sports caps, you can squeeze it. Yeah. Well, I used to like pretend to squeeze at the boys and it'd obviously be down and go like that. Pretend to squeeze it and they're like, react. I remember... On the Lions tour we were on, whatever. And
wondered how long it'd be.
I was doing it to all the boys and stuff, and I was just walking out the room. It was like a social room. And Neil Back was there, went backy. He turned around, squeezed it right him.
Oh, he would love that as well.
It went all over his phone. Oh my god, I felt so. I just walked off laughing.
Would you ever see the funny side?
I waited like 5 minutes. I had to go back and say, "Oh mate, I'm really sorry. I thought the top was closed. I'm just trying to like make you flinch."
It's a gag I do all the time. It's usually really funny. Back
I was devastated.
Yeah, I think it's he'll wait and then you'll have a session about 3 days later.
I'm
and
surprised you
survived
that.
Yeah, I am. It's because I went home injured, wasn't it? So he felt sorry for me. Well, no, he probably had a Ouija doll.
I remember it's funny because he's not one of the people that, cause he was sort of athletic, small, athletic, and you know, good link players, decent skills, and scored a few tries. And Pete Backey's not one of those guys that people mention when they talk about the hard nuts of Tigers. But I always thought playing against him, he was hard as fuck. Backey, mega tough bloke.
Yeah,
tough but hard. I mean,
tough for different reasons because he could just take an unbelievable beating and just bounce back up like a little rubber ball. He was. You know, he was athletic. He was also like, to be behind someone like him was quality for me as a young flanker.
I bet.
Then when they signed like Josh Cronfeld, you've got the two greatest open sides in the world at that time in your club. I mean, it wasn't great for my sort of progression in terms of
good to watch,
getting games in.
Yeah, he didn't play much, though, did he, Josh? Yeah, no. You've
got a built-in season ticket, though, haven't you?
Yeah, mate, he got injured. Josh got injured. Actually, his first game, he had like a heel floating bone. So he's going to go out onto the pitch just before he went out. Couldn't move his foot, so I got in and essentially didn't let it go. But to have those guys and to see the two different characters, like Backey, really, really disciplined, OCD with his preparation of everything, you know, because he had to be to make it. Whereas Josh was the polar opposite, proper relaxed, chilled out, did things his way. But to know that you could be the best, because for years I was drilled that, okay, you've got to be like Backey. Put me in a room with Backey for the first couple of years, and you know, we're polar opposite characters. But so it was really nice for me to see that you can be successful and you don't have to be one way or the other. You can do it your own way. So to actually learn off those two blokes was one of the best bits of experience.
Just talking about back row, Jack Bennett is asking, like, who would be your current back row for England right now?
If they're all fit. If they're all fit. Well,
not all fit. Say from Six Nations.
Well, let's do all fit first.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, because Billy gets to play.
So he would play. I mean, he's incredible, isn't he? He'd start. Underhill. I really like Simmons at the minute.
Yeah, he's great.
But I also like, and this will be really dull and boring, but Chris Robshaw. I think, you know, when I used to play against him, I never used to think he'd be an international. I just thought he'd be a good, solid club player. But what I love about our sport is that you give someone a chance and they'll either take it or they won't. And he had that chance under Lancaster, mate. And fair play to him. He's a proper good bloke. And I've got no problem comparing him to Hilly. you know, in the sense that he's just a workhorse, that he'll get through work, and you need people like him in your team. And yeah. I think at the minute, I think it's really important that he's still there.
He's taken a lot of criticism as well,
hasn't he? He has, mate, and he's dealt with it, and he's just gone with it, and he's never
bounced back.
Yeah.
but all the work he does, people say, well, it's only stats, but all the work, every tackle and carry he makes is a tackle and carry that someone else doesn't have to make, right? That's the point. So he's not doing work for the sake of it. He's doing necessary work, which gives other people who are perhaps more flamboyant and explosive and don't have the engine he has the chance to...
So he's a six, work, yeah?
Yeah, six. So,
if Billy's not fit, who's going to play?
Nathan Hughes is injured too. You've got Sam Simmons, Zach Mercer... You got Courtney Laws, you got Rob Shaw.
Courtney shouldn't play in the back row.
Marrow, you don't reckon?
No, they've tried it before. I don't know if you remember, he played six. And he has, you know, Eddie Jones has actually switched him and Marrow during the course of the last couple of Six Nations. But I think if you try and play a second row in the back row, you can do it at club level, but at international level, you're going to get burnt at some stage.
Yeah.
I'd have Simmons at eight. I just he's got something different. He's not Billy Vunipola. You know, he's not
more footwork and power, isn't he?
But he's a proper little athlete, isn't he? And he's going to bring something totally different to the game. Underhill, you know, he can be a big ball carrier. He can be a totally, you know, destructive machine in defence, which is, you know, that's what, if you're looking for turnovers, you know, he can give you those in the hit, not always in the jackal. You can find him another way. But Zach Mercer as well, I think he probably deserves an opportunity at some
stage.
Coming
off the bench, maybe.
Yeah, I think he does, because he's been so consistent.
Raw, isn't he?
His work rate
as
well.
He's a fantastic player.
But he's got some good skills. He's got a nice skill set. But there's a load of young kids as well coming through, which is quite nice to see.
Before we do any more questions, just quickly, Shanks, Mudos rather. It's interesting, when you look back at, we'll move on from the Leicester Tigers chat now, but when you look back at your time at Leicester, you know, I don't know how you finished up at Cardiff, Shanks, but I didn't quite finish on my own terms at Bath, and my exit from Bath as a player wasn't handled perfectly, and there was some, you know, got a bit political at points for no real reason because everyone was kind of friends, and it's a long, boring story, and it's kind of private, really, but I look back and I still love the club, and I've still got great mates there and that sort of stuff, but it definitely took a bit of an edge. It took a portion of my love for Bath away the way it ended, because it just ends like that for so many people, but I don't think it has to. So when you look back to the way you exited Leicester Tigers, was that exactly how you wanted it, or does it take a bit of an edge off, or what?
Yeah, no. Mate, I don't know. When I look back, there's very few players that have had the sort of fairy tale ending.
Williams, he's the only person I know.
Or Jono. Jono and Backy had their last game at Welford Road, you know. Crowd was singing the name, and Backy scored a try, and fairy tale. Shane Williams, you know, he played at
Australia, scored a try against Australia's last
amazing,
game. Yeah,
amazing.
I know.
And Brian O'Driscoll, you know, some people get it, and fair play to them, and they are legends that we're talking about there. You know, I only ever wanted to play for Leicester. Watched him as a kid, started playing at 15 with the youth team, whatever, and then went all the way through. And at 30, I got a phone call from Richard Cockerell when I was still England captain. Sort of said, come into the office tomorrow. At which point, you know, having never had that phone call ever in my career from Richard Cockerell, you sort of knew it was like, right. So I prepared myself for a tricky conversation, but never really expected to be released, and just got the, mate, we're going to let you go. It's not good news. That was it. It's not good news. We're going to let you go. And I was And at the time, it was really difficult because all of a sudden I've been released by my dream club I only ever wanted to play for. I'd probably gone through a stale period the year before when I'd had like three injuries back to back and I was not enjoying my rugby, and I just got back into it, was loving playing and back playing for England, and then all of a sudden you have sort of the rug pulled out from under you, and you never really expect it because Leicester's always been about loyalty, family, club, but it's now business. And in hindsight, I can look back and reflect on it and say, okay, look, I came to Bath, I played 19 games. Was I value for money for them? No, not in the slightest. You know, so would I have been value for money for Leicester? Probably not. But could I have been value further down the line? You know, probably definitely in terms of, you know, carrying on the legacy of the club or whatever. So there was definitely animosity, bitterness for a long time towards the club, as I'm sure you had, Flat. So
yeah. Well,
I think still I harbour a little bit of that, but you have to park it at some stage, don't you? Because you know, life moves on. We're not rugby players anymore. It's a business. The game has changed.
It's like moaning about a traffic jam, isn't it? It's just the way it is. Yeah, everyone has a moan, but at some point, stop bothering.
And I absolutely loved my career. I absolutely loved it. You said, I miss training. I miss smashing myself into people. Yeah. I miss sometimes the pain of waking up and your head sticking to the pillow and the sheets and the sweats.
You've earned it. You've earned all
that. Crawling to the toilet, trying to go for a whiz.
Yeah.
And, you know, I miss all that, but I loved it. But that's done now, so you've just got to look on, and that animosity has to go, you know. And, the, you know, parts of your... It may be continued for me, so that Leicester, I left Leicester, had a wonderful end. We won the league, beat Saracens, but, you know, departure wasn't what I wanted. Came to Bath, really happy to join Bath because I didn't want to leave the Premiership.
Yeah.
You know, it was a very different environment that I came to, and that, you know, I probably found it very difficult to get my head around. And, you know, maybe there was I'd have done a lot of things differently now if I look back in terms of when I came to Bath and how I managed myself and how I dealt with other people and the situation. But then the sort of departure from England as well, you know, that my last game for England was us losing the quarterfinal in the World Cup 2011 and all the issues that went on with that World Cup. So, and me being captain and, and the fact that when you're captain, you know, and when you're coach, that the buck stops with you as it should do. So
it probably feels to you like it's all your fault at that point, or everyone's blaming you at that point. They're not, but it probably feels like that.
But I think also you take the responsibility, because when you're a captain, you know, you have responsibilities, and when you're a coach, you have responsibilities, and you have to wear that. And I hope that I've been manly enough and put my hand up and said, you know, there's plenty of things I could have done better as a captain. There's plenty of things we could have done better on that trip, but ultimately we let ourselves down, you know, as players. That was the most disappointing thing, because we'd spoken about it endlessly. You know, the person I was really most disappointed for was Jono, because you've got the bloke that's led us to World Cup glory, an absolute, you know,
icon.
Icon yeah. doesn't say
not
it enough, does it?
No.
Yeah,
he's a hero.
Yeah, and you loved. Yeah. And you got to play with Jono. Just there was something about him. my kids watch for Ethan for some unknown reason. He's obsessed with rugby. Not strangely, he's obsessed with rugby, but watching old games of me. That's all he'll watch. In the morning, he'll come down and be watching old DVDs. I was like,
he joins you when you're watching them.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, not that one again. Just rewind it. Hold on. What was I doing there?
Watch this hit, boy.
Yeah. But there was well, I can't remember when it was, but there was this picture with Jono, and it was just him seething and scowling, and I just, he was just such a great character and leader. It's just such a shame he's not involved in the game. That's my biggest, you know, regret, really, is that he's now not in the game.
Yeah. What? It's funny. When did the start of the last World Cup in London? The first, you're probably there at the opening ceremony in some.
15, you mean 2015?
Yeah, 2015, whatever I said. So it's at Twickenham, and the opening ceremony's there, and we're doing some of the stuff there. And there's this, they have all the World Cup winning captains that have ever won the World Cup on these pedestals in the middle of the pitch to finish the. And I'm not interested in Olympic ceremonies and pre-tournament ceremonies, but it was really cool. But this bit to finish it, and they had all the World Cup winning captains. So you had John Smith and whoever up there, and whoever it was, Johnny Eels, I can't remember, but they're all there, and they're all, and you know it's coming, it's dark. And they spotlighted each one in turn. They all got a cheer, and you knew they were leaving Jono till last. Mm. And they left Jono, and I'd heard rumours from various people that he didn't want to do it. He just wanted to stay away. Yeah. And
in all fairness, that's not Jono's thing, is it?
He would hate that, the limelight, but also, in the middle of it. You know, a few years earlier, the last World Cup, he'd been dumped out, and it was horrible, and it wounded him, I'm sure. And a tougher bloke as he is, I'm sure that wounded him and still does. I can't believe it, how it wouldn't. But they spotlighted Jono, and he's just standing there, massive, holding the ball in one hand like he always did when he was walking out. And you saw a tear come to his eye, and the crowd went absolutely nuts. And to a man, honestly, I looked around, it was the most bizarre thing, because we just waited to do a TV link, and it's like, yeah, crack on so we can finish, get this, all right, this is what we're going to say, practicing our stuff. Everyone started crying. The people everywhere, Durders and me, but Bafes and everyone is there just in tears. It was the most unbelievable thing. And there is just something, sure, for a Welsh bloke, it's not the same, Shanko, but for an English bloke or woman, there is something about Jono.
Yeah,
and he's not my mate, he's your mate, but it still guts me that he's not part of the game anymore.
Yeah.
Just to like bring things back now, you know, heads up, boys, heads up. We're in this together.
It's got so deep. Do we
I'm crying,
it's like
now.
A counselling session.
Yeah, I've just done
God,
a week.
So, Jono.
Just done a bit of
do you have a do you have a favourite Leicester game and a favourite England game that you look back now?
Oh, mate, I struggle to
with
remember
nostalgia.
Anything, to be honest, you know, I
do you remember it?
He doesn't know what day it is. No.
Mate, honestly, I do generally struggle to remember any games. I did my autobiography and going through that.
2002 Heineken Cup final.
if I had to pick one game, it would not be that one. I actually didn't end up playing in it whatsoever.
It was one after, wasn't it?
No, one before. So 2001. I was on the bench, and so we'd, you know, rather say arrogance or whatever, we always saw ourselves as Leicester as the best team in Europe, never to have won the trophy. So we got dumped out in 97. Then the following years, we didn't quite get it right. Although we'd won the Premiership sort of four times back to back, we couldn't get it right in Europe. 2001, we went and played Stade Francais at the Parc de France. So they played in their own backyard, which is supposed to be a neutral final, which is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. So they had advantage already, but that was like ammunition to us.
Yeah.
And it was wicked. And do you know what I remember is at the end, I remember being devastated I didn't go on. You spoke about Paul Gustard, obviously he's now England coach. He was on the bench, he went on ahead of me. Adam Balding, Will Johnson, they all went on. Martin Corey started. I was sat on the bench, didn't get on the pitch, but it didn't matter one iota. I was still... When the final whistle went, it'd been the most incredible game. Leon Lloyd scored two of the most remarkable tries, yet wasn't man of the match. You know, it's got to be the greatest Highland Cup travesty. but the whistle goes, and I probably celebrated harder in that moment because I knew, you know, having been through the club and been a part of its makeup from the age of 10 and sitting in the stands and then joining as a kid and going through it and knowing how much it meant to not just us as the players, but the kit man was Cliff Shepherd, who'd played like 150 games for the club.
Right,
The physio was John Duggan, who'd played like 300 games on the wing, world's best comb over.
Yeah.
And Pete Tom, CEO and chairman, Pete Wheeler, all guys that were inherently part of the club and being there, knew what it was about, and they were all in the changing room afterwards and celebrating with those guys. And I've still got the ball now, and I didn't play a second of that game. But it's signed by everyone that was in the change room. Ian Dosser Smith, who was my first coach at small.
Matt's dad.
At school. Matt's dad, Rory Underwood came in. You know, it meant so much to that club. So I suppose actually now thinking about it, when you put yourself back in the moment, that would by far and away, you know, outweigh any of the other games that I did actually play in, and we won all the finals and stuff. That was just to be a part of that was wicked. And watch Ben Kay nearly drop the trophy in there. In the French, whatever, what's the river in France?
Seine.
The Seine. He was stood on the little boat we had as a trip afterwards. The boys were drinking stuff out of it. And he was having a picture, and it actually dropped out of his hands over the side of the boat, but landed like in the bit below.
Oh my like, God! Could you imagine?
Could have been gone. I actually broke it as well. Because afterwards, I wanted to have a. How old was I? I think I was 20, and I wanted to have a photo of Jono and Jordan, who was, you know, one of my closest mates at the club. So he had it, and I went to take the trophy, got the trophy off Austin, who just had the photo. And as I took it, he went to try and kick me in the nuts. Standard. So I went to block it with the trophy, and the lid fell off, and the little gold disc on the top snapped clean off. Absolutely brutal.
Fix it up, mate. Yeah. That's all right. There's budget for that.
70 grand trophy. My bad. So sorry. Yeah. Anyway.
That's not as shocking as the day we were in... Vancouver or Toronto Mudos in like 2001 or something on tour, and we got to a restaurant and it was like, I've just remembered this now, and it was like, lads, order whatever you want, a few beers, a bit of dinner, and you were like, right, I'll have the beluga caviar please. It was like fucking set. And he got it and you had one little mouth, you're like, that's fucking rank, and just pushed it to the side, just left
it. I'd completely forgotten about that.
Do you remember that? I just thought about that now.
I'd never tried beluga caviar, thought I might as well.
It's free, isn't it? Have that.
Yeah,
that's Ming and
when, when it's free, you just order anything. You know what, most expensive thing.
I mean, that was. I mean, I don't know whether it still exists, but you know, those tours were amazing. That was one of Clive. It was Clive's tour, wasn't it?
It was a cap tour, mate.
Yeah,
it was like during the lines, but it was a cap tour, so we're all getting capped. But the games that we were kind of definitely.
'01 was that?
'01.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Canada,
was
America,
amazing.
And Clive just dispersed the RFU card. You know, wherever it was amazing. And as a youngster, you know, going in, it was. You sort of stuff like that. You forget how privileged you are at the time when stuff's just being paid for. You get
because it was obviously the Lions, wasn't it? So I was in Japan then, and it was the same. Like, but obviously, there's loads of Japanese
restaurants.
Were
the Lions in 01, were you?
No, I was in Japan.
Oh, I got playing.
First cap.
Wales, yeah.
And we'd go out to all these Japanese restaurants. This is before sushi became that popular like it is now. So no one really wanted it. But our times have changed because we were like in TGI Fridays, McDonald's, KFC, Frankie and Benny's.
Yeah,
you know
the boys don't. Eat what you want. Drink now, do they? Don't You know, it's all about
very little
aesthetics and performance. And I suppose it has to be.
They love drinking water.
They love water. Yeah, they smash the water.
Like the taste of their own mouth.
But you know, you go, you look at it, and you go to Max Lahiff's Instagram account, and you look at his rig, and you think, I could give up beer. I still won't look like that. What's the point?
I mean, they are specimens now.
People off. So who's it the day? A couple of days ago. Oh, the bloke round here. Mate, I came round.
Did you?
Yeah. Darren came round, and Darren the window cleaner. And
he used to play for Bath.
No, he didn't. All right.
No, he didn't. Strange.
Yeah, I know.
Just helping the lads.
Play for old corporations.
Just seen Alex Crockett taking the bins out. Give him a wave.
So he's around here, and we were talking about, and he was like, "So what do you weigh now, Dave? And 19 stone?" I was like, "Yeah, a bit more than that, unfortunately." And we're talking about being out of shape, old geezers, and whatever it was. And he said, "Who's in your position now?" He goes, "The props have always carried a bit, haven't they?" I said, "Well, actually, have a look at this. This is Max Lahiff rig. He's a tight end, I was a loose head, but he plays my position. That's what they look like now." And it's 5 years ago I stopped playing. It's only 5 years. Yeah. And you're like, holy shit.
Slimani doesn't look like that, though, does he?
No, he doesn't. Slimani's the best in the world, and he doesn't look like that. He looks like a hobbit on steroids. And long may he survive as the world's best.
Who's the lad that plays for racing as well? He's 133.
Tamifuna. Mudos.
I mean, he is.
Mudos. I mean, I know I'm out of shape, but they're saying that he's about my weight. No, he's not. He's 150 kilos if he's a kilo. He is enormous.
They said 130.
134. It's not true. And that's what they've been told. But you go to various websites and his weight changes. Like Racing, he's 142. And there's like an old, whatever it was, Pacific Islanders squad thing, and he's 155. And you're like, he's 300 kilos, I reckon. I reckon he's 900 kilos.
I remember playing against Twiga Marlers. Remember Inga Twiga Marlers at Newcastle? And you know, like before a game, when you're quite young, you're looking through the programme, checking up people's weights, like how heavy they are.
What were you then, 12 stone?
Yeah, probably like 13 and a half stone maybe. And I saw his thing, and he was like 14 stone, 14 and a half stone. I was like, oh, that's not too bad. He's only a stone heavier. I just use my power. When you actually come up against it, he was massive. Yeah. He was like 16 stone.
He was about
4 foot
tall as well and 16
and
stone.
Brilliant.
I remember going up there to play. It might have been a similar game, but it was one of my first games of men's rugby. I was 18, you know, playing for Saris, and Mark Evans was our head coach, like director of rugby. And we're in the tunnel, and I was doing something with the physio, and Evzy just tapped me on the shoulder. He goes, look at this. And the Newcastle changing room door was like open. It was swinging shut, and he trapped it with his foot. And he said, that's your oppo in there. And Marius Herta, the Springbok prop, the best name ever, Marius Herta, was just getting his shoulder strapped up, and he was standing by the door. And he looked then like Max Lahiff looks now. He was massive, rigged up, veins in his biceps. And I was like, holy shit. And Mark Evans said, yeah, that's what I thought. And he went, rather you than me. He slapped me on the back and walked out. That was it. Rather you than me. Back here now.
Have a stormer.
Straight at the Hurt Locker. Yeah. We should probably tie it up now, Shanks, because we've all got places to go and people to see. What we're going to do is bid goodbye to Mudos, and then we'll have a little quick chat about the Prem and all that sort of stuff. But Mudos has got to go. He's doing Zumba with some of the dads from school tonight.
I love Zumba, mate. It's the Lycra. It's all about the Lycra.
Yeah, he's going on. He's putting the Lycra on with some dads from school. So Mudos, thanks for coming
Cheers,
over.
Cheers, boys. Mate, thank you very
really
much.
Enjoyed that. Loved You're it. A legend.
Thank you.
Guess bet the week time.
Let's have a bet, Tommy.
Okay. I don't think we won last week, did we? We bet the Scarlets Toulon game. Scarlets obviously won by 3 points, but I think we might have gone 5 or 8. So
yeah.
Sorry about that.
Soz kids.
That was Dave's choice. This week, we're going to be betting on the Anglo-Welsh fixture, Gloucester versus the Ospreys.
If only there were a highlight show you could watch that just summed up all the Anglo-Welsh action in 1 hour, in a convenient 1 hour package presented by two great guys.
With a Welshman and an Englishman.
Ideally, it's Anglo-Welsh, Tom. Makes sense, doesn't it? If only you could do it from Bath, which is near my house. Oh, we are. We are. Anyway.
Channel 5, tune in. Sunday night. I'm going to go Gloucester.
Yep.
By 4 points.
Right.
It's at home. It's at King's Home versus the Ospreys Friday night. Gloucester by 4 points or more. That is our bet of the week.
Noted.
Terms and conditions do apply. What a lovely chap.
Isn't he nice, Mudos?
Forget what a legend he is.
Yeah, you do.
I've seen him for ages, either.
And he always hugs his mates when he sees them.
Yeah.
I'm not a hugger, you're not a hugger, but I like his hugs. Because he's just so bloody nice, isn't he?
Do you see I got a hug?
Yeah.
you're not very tactile, are you? You're a bit like odd about that.
Did you have, just because I had to have a shower after doesn't make me odd.
It's because you wore gloves to shake his hand.
Mate, he's a big bloke as
he
well.
He's a big bloke, yeah.
You forget.
He would have lost a ton of weight, but he's a
definitely. Good, yeah. I mean, he mentioned like what big legs I got, but
did he?
Well, I've got.
I didn't hear that.
I've got skinny jeans on.
Didn't hear that. Didn't hear him say that.
It's because we weren't talking about you. It was really. I found that really interesting though, to find out what he's doing. All like unbelievable challenges.
Yeah, he goes hard, but he always did.
Yeah,
and he always will.
And I suppose that's what he's replaced, you know, going out and playing rugby for. And
yeah. And thanks to...
That's his new, like, you know, like people like Shane Williams, they're doing like Iron Man. Ryan Jones doing Iron Man.
Yeah, me and Ryan and everyone doing Iron Man. I'm doing... I just went to the gym this morning, did a CrossFit WOD.
I bought some new golf clubs. That was my midlife crisis.
5 sets of 5 on the squat rack. Thanks to Fee Hamilton, Mudos' his agent, because one thing we didn't really touch on, a bit we did, but Mudos is just the most wonderful bloke, but... not very gifted administratively. Like, he's me minus about 1 million points, and I'm not great. And his agent Fee sorted out. So thanks, Fee. Mudos can't sort out his own diary. He's just not. He's not above it.
He's not like equipped that way, is he?
He was like that when he was 18, mate. He just can't do it. He's good at other stuff.
Better talk some rugby then. Results at the weekend. Now have to start on Scarlets v Toulon.
Yeah,
did a bit of corporate in the pub for that. Done
did
the
you?
Railway in Penarth.
Okay.
Did it for free. Just had a chat with someone in there.
Oh, what a man. Do you mean you went to the pub and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did some pub sports. Played darts and pool and everything.
You can call it a bit of corporate if you just go to the pub. I'm doing a bit of corporate after this pod.
Are you?
Well, I'm meeting 2 mates for a drink. Is that the same thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well done. Love that game. Brilliant Amazing. Game. And, through the whole weekend, there were so many permutations, some results that needed to go team's way to get through. You know, it wasn't black and white who was going to finish in that top 8.
It came right down to Munster against Cast.
I loved it though. Toulon, I thought the Scarlets were going to win, but you're always wary about the European champions Toulon and the power they've got and the size they've got, because the Scarlets don't have huge physical players.
Heft. Yeah.
And brutes basically. You know, they're a skillful team that play high tempo, like to offload, keep the ball alive. Very good at basics, but what a game. Patchell's pass for the first try. It was like a 40-yard pass off the left.
That's exaggerating it, but it was long, yeah.
Yeah.
It was about 75 yard. He passed it from one try line to the other. It was amazing.
Overhead.
Actually. Amazing when you think about it like
that. Yeah, like Brady.
The only problem is with these quarterfinals is that Scarlets are playing La Rochelle, and they're my 2 favourite teams.
I know. What I also liked from Wayne Pivak and Stephen Jones... was the confidence they kept with Dan Jones at 10, because he went to Bath last week and he only came in because Lee Halfpenny had a rib tickler.
Yeah.
And Lee Halfpenny had to sit for most of that game on the bench.
Mm. You can't drop somebody when
you can't,
like
you
that.
Can't. But it was a great game and it was close all the way.
Do you know what's going to be a shame? Is not a shame, it's going to be great in a sense. It's going to be great when Wayne Pivak and Stephen Jones get given the Welsh job after Gatland, but... It's going to be a real shame for Scarlets, just like it's going to be a shame if Rob Baxter ever gets the England job for Chiefs.
No, you're right. Were you a little bit surprised Trindoute didn't start at 10?
No.
No?
I've always liked watching him, but I've realised the last season or two, I've liked watching him because he has magic in him, but he has a howler in him. He's like Clément Poitrineau, but he's in a position of more control.
A little bit. I think he's better than Bellew. But anyway... Didn't matter. So glad they won. They're through to the 8. La Rochelle at home.
Yeah.
Wow. Talk about two teams who've got a similar philosophy in the way they play.
Oh, I'd love it.
It's like we were saying, like La Rochelle have got a couple of really small wing as well. You're talking like 11 stone sort of size.
These days, which
is very small, but still shows you that rugby is a game of evasion and size does not matter at all.
Well, not always. Sometimes it helps.
It does if you're in the front row.
But they've also got Bottier in the back row, who's just an absolute dominator. He can play 12 as well. Absolute dominator.
Someone sign him. Do you know what I found a very surprising result of the weekend?
What?
Was Glasgow-Exeter.
Why did that surprise you?
I thought Exeter were going to do a job, and Glasgow got absolutely hammered last week.
Yeah.
But
Exeter what felt, a change. Felt the reaction, didn't they?
What a change in them, yeah. On the artificial pitch.
The rugby they played was just, at times, was just breathtaking. I thought
Tommy Seymour's try.
Yeah, it's just amazing. That's try of the season.
You don't see done. Tries like that hardly
done.
Ever, do
try
you?
Try of the season done, yeah. Amazing. I thought Chiefs would go up there and win as well.
Yeah.
But it's, there's a, that's again, it's two. That's two proper teams,
it's,
that.
And it's because Glasgow were pretty crap against Leinster.
Yeah.
Like Leinster just running through them the previous week.
Yeah.
But it shows you what I can happen in Leinster, sport.
I still think Leinster are going to win. Do you?
Yeah. You know,
imagine win you top seed and you get the eighth seed and you get Saracens as your quarterfinal.
But you look at that tough. Leinster team, you think, right, they were so successful with Darcy, with O'Driscoll, with all these players. Heaslip, who's still there, but he's not playing
Brad
at the
Thorne, Rocky Elsom.
Loads of great players like that. And you think, right, how can they keep going and going and going? But they do.
There's something about the culture, the coaching, the behaviour.
The academy.
Players
coming through.
That's long-termism.
Bit of a shock for me, but well played, Glasgow. Probably written a few wrongs.
Written off a few lefts.
Ospreys.
Steve Tandy sacked.
Yeah, Steve Tandy sacked.
Thing is though, boy, he couldn't quit because then he doesn't get a check, being brutal about it. I know it's very sad. You can't quit that job.
No, I mean...
you get sacked and you get a load of money, it helps, you know?
A lot of players like getting sacked because they get a paycheck. They can go find another club straight away. So what they're doing is they're getting paid twice.
Yeah.
Not the worst thing to happen to you. Depends where he's going to go now. It's obviously... No one likes being sacked from a coaching, as a coach, really, because, you know, where'd you go from here?
Yeah.
It's a tough one. There's not many jobs out there for coaches, really, is there?
No, I was at Sarries Northampton the other day, and Northampton weren't good, and it didn't work for them. They got hammered by Sarries, but Sarries really were quite special. Alex Good was quite spectacular.
Owen Farrell.
And do you know what's funny? Because Nick Mullins... afterwards said, I think we might have undercooked in commentary Owen Farrell's contribution, and I agreed with him on Twitter. You're dead right, we did. We're kind of used to it, but I think he scored 27 points or something. But he was fantastic. Alex Good, fantastic. They showed Mako Vunipola, just outrageously good.
And they showed it. Is he still not starting for you for England?
He is now.
Okay. God, you changed your mind.
No, I didn't. Joe Marler's banned. So, but also, Skulk Berger. I mean... The guy just does not fatigue. It's incredible.
You see, you know, passages of play, you see him carrying like four or five times.
Unbelievable.
Easy, don't you?
There was one where he carried three phases out of five he carried. A few minutes later, Mako carried three phases out of five. It's a joke. They're amazing.
I think you saw it from Bosch's try, how good Farrell is when he takes it flat. Like I was describing me playing touch. Just straightens up the line, picking out the weak defenders around guard. You know, people that get flat-footed, people that are ball watching,
55-year-old solicitors,
and just ghosted through.
Yeah,
yeah, so good.
47-year-old bus drivers, you skin them all, don't you? Well done.
Accountants,
yeah, well
office
done.
Jobs, just sitting in the chair all day eating. Yeah, and Saracens are through as well.
Yeah, through. Very interesting. And Wasps to achieve a bonus point on that pitch, which is just so awful. Like the Rico, it's so awful. Well done to them. I mean,
they're going to miss Carr, aren't they? Number eight.
Yeah. I think most teams in the world would miss him if he left. He has been fabulous for them. I'm sure they'll try and get him back when his contract's up at the Stormers.
I'd miss my car.
Oh, I had this bloody... During the Sarries game, I was commentating on that, and then they kept panning up to the corporate box or the bar, whatever, where Billy Vunipola was watching, and he's obviously a rock star with other Sarries players. Just for an interesting shot. And next to him was Talupo Faletau. And I just had a little joke and I said, hey, I don't want to start any rumours, but he has signed. I said something like he's signed a 9-year contract with Saracens. That's why he's here. Clearly a joke. The number of people that tweeted me saying,
no,
he's still got a year left on his contract. This is outrageous. It's incorrect. You are incorrect.
As if a club is going to sign someone on a 9-year contract.
Come on. Especially when they've got Billy. Why would you sign Faletau when you've got Billy? Of course you wouldn't. And you've got Jackson Reagan. Anyway, it's clearly a joke. Like these just... For Christ's sake, people, come on.
It's not a contractor brought in to build a bridge, is he?
No.
A stadium.
Yeah.
Very good weekend of action. Should we have a look at the finals draw?
Well, my favourite quarter final. I think the most interesting, I think, will be Leinster against Sarries. But I think hopefully the best to watch will be Scarlets La Rochelle.
Yeah, I think it will be as well. I think that there might be an issue at the Scarlets because I'm sure you it's either 14,000 or 15,000 capacity you have to be able to hold a quarterfinal.
Yeah.
And the Scarlets aren't quite there. So they're either going to have to get in some temporary seating or they're going to have to move it, which is a shame because I always find it strange when teams want to move away from their stadium to...
For big games.
Like you could, we've done it before in Cardiff at the Blues where we've moved across to the Millennium Stadium. Other teams do it as well. But you're losing a bit of your identity there and what teams don't like. Because teams don't like going to stadiums where there's not that many luxuries. It's quite cold. The change rooms are quite small. Subs got to get changed in the shower. You've got to get rubs.
That's what Cardiff offered you.
Yeah, a little bit like that. You know, you'd rather a team turn up to your stadium not liking it and turning their nose up at it.
It's money, isn't it, boy?
Rather than thinking, oh, this
it's
is
just
nice.
Cash, isn't it?
I hope the Scarlets...
It's easy for us to say don't do it, but when you're losing millions of quid and you own a club, it's probably quite reasonable.
But I hope the Scarlets have it, the Parker Scarlets and Leslie. I really do.
Why don't they just take a few... I don't mean to like talk about certain brands, but why don't they just get a few Land Rover Discovery 7-seaters in and just line them up? They'll look great and they can each vehicle can hold 7 adults comfortably.
Yeah, they'd need 100 of them.
Yep, no problem.
Wouldn't need floodlights then, would you?
Exactly. The new lights they've got, the LED solar pixel jobbies, they're like searchlights, Tom.
A little bit worried that there's only one Aviva Premiership team.
No.
Always gone on about how great the league is, yet there's
it's funny.
One, two, three.
Calling me worried about it would be overstating it.
There's three Pro 14 teams.
Owen Slott's tweeted a couple of interesting things. Times head rugby
Slotty.
Correspondent. Slotty.
Is that what they call him?
I presume so. Yes, it is, yeah. So
I'd call him Machine.
And he's tweeted a couple of graphics.
I'd call him Machine.
Yeah, of course you would, yeah. And it's out of all the guys who tour with the Lions who have played the most minutes and the top 10 are English. So then you think, well, okay, that's quite punchy. So all the English lads are just playing way more rugby. And then it's like, right, there's another one who's tweeted. I think I retweeted it today. So have a look at that, folks, if you want. And it's how many of the minutes they've played, how many of those minutes have been domestic and European. And it's like guys like Sean O'Brien have played almost no club rugby at all. They're just basically resting for Europe. And I don't, you know, it doesn't bother me at all. But there is just no question that that is an advantage. You know, I remember playing against Leinster and we got spanked by them a few years ago over there for Bath. And afterwards, we weren't talking about, yeah, well, they rested. We were talking about they're just much better than us today, this year, so that's fine. But it's not an excuse, but it is a bona fide reason. The guys are just playing, the English lads just have to play so much more rugby than a lot of those other guys.
So if you're looking at, fair point. If you're looking at these fixtures now, these quarterfinal, who's your winner? Who's going to win the tournament when you're looking at them right now?
Leinster.
Okay.
Leinster are your winners, I reckon. Who do I want to win it?
Difficult.
I mean, I
don't
Sarri's
know. That Leinster-Sarries game is good.
I'd love Sarries to win it. I know love those boys, but I'd love La Rochelle or Scarlets to win it as well. I'd love Clermont to win it.
You know, if Scarlets win, if Saracens win, you know, you wouldn't bet against them either, would you? Very good, though. Very exciting.
Very exciting.
We actually had a question from someone a couple of weeks ago, and I can't remember who it was, but they're basically saying, has pro rugby and all the training and weights you've done given you any uses in your life right now?
No. Nothing.
Really?
Nothing.
For me, it'd be like run upstairs really fast, because I can do like...
Can you?
4 or 5 steps at a time. Like no, bounding
can't.
Up there like
your
a...
Your knee's ruined.
Like a gazelle.
No, you can't.
It's short burst, mate. I'm not running the marathon. I'm just like bounding up the stairs like an impala.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I remember when... Yeah, one of the lads lived in town and he had a little parking space outside his house. And a couple of years back, we all got back to his house and someone had taken his spot. It said no parking, but there's literally nowhere else to park except at the wreck and then walk back across town to his house. So he said, we're going to pick up the car and move it. So we did actually, it was like an Audi A3 or something. We did pick it up and just moved it into the middle of the road and stuck his car in.
Like Franco,
that's Andy.
You're like Franco Colombo from Pumping Iron.
Yeah.
do you blow up and pop a hot water bottle
that's
then
handy.
As well?
Yeah, yeah. So that's handy.
Do you know? Have you,
there's no practical use for being me, really. No.
Have you ever Have you ever read? It is called. It's Arnold Schwarzenegger's autobiography. It's really good. It's named after one of his films. I've gone blank, completely blank now.
Not Pumping Iron, not Commando.
No.
Running Man.
No.
Not Twins.
No. Kindergarten Cop. Let's play a game. Who is your name and True what Lies. Does your daddy do?
True Lies.
Anyway,
what's the point? I came home once.
It's remember? Really good. Really good. He was a self-made millionaire before he even got into acting through his bodybuilding and he'd buy blocks of flats and do them up with Franco Colombo and
yeah, he's a super guy. Remember my old flatmate Duxy, Tim Dux from Dulwich College, first team captain. Lives in Miami now. Hi Tim. I remember he was my flatmate in when we lived in Islington / Stoke Newington for a few months and. Remember coming home one day and I just heard in his room, I just heard this and I was like, obviously thought something untoward was going on. So I poked my head in and he's super fit and an amazing Nick and always was. And he was just doing sit-ups on a Swiss ball while reading Arnold Schwarzenegger's Bodybuilding to Encyclopedia, Guide to Bodybuilding Encyclopedia of Bodybuilding, naked. He's just sweating naked reading Arnie.
Get a motivation.
Like, and he's like, all right, mate. So yeah.
It's called Total Recall, okay?
Total Recall.
And if you buy his audiobook, he starts off narrating it as well.
Oh, brilliant.
In his voice.
Yeah, cool.
Because he's the narrator.
We should stop now.
Yeah, it's a really long pod.
Sorry, guys, but Mudos just...
You might have done this in two parts.
I think you'll agree, not download it in two parts and do it more, but I think you might agree that Mudos was fab, so it was just absolutely worth letting him run because really enjoyed that.
Some exciting news as well next week as we're starting our ITV podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh, we are.
We'll make sure you know where you can download that as well.
I'm going to properly
hydrate. And we carry on this podcast as well to talk about Aviva Anglo-Welsh. Make sure you tune in Channel 5 Sunday night.
See you Sunday night, guys. Ta-ra.
Bye.